You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow!
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way, because you are listening to the movie show.
Look up. Look left. Now look to your right. Look up again. Look to your left again. Look right. Now look down. You see there? There's a like button. Hit it. And then subscribe. That is a bit on the... on your right side. This video is not sponsored by YouTube.
It's definitely not sponsored by YouTube.
And if you're listening, you go into Active TV, the movie show on YouTube. Go search it right now. Active TV, A-C-T-I-V. Yeah, remember that. A-C-T-I-V-E TV. On YouTube, and you'll see a visual version of this podcast. Then you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
And if you don't know what podcast we are talking about, we are talking about the wonderful, the divine, the very highly entertaining Active FM.
And
that's A-C-T-I-V-E FM.
And then it like calms down. What's up?
I'm Sash.
My name is Ryan.
Today we are talking about Quentin Tarantino's first film.
What a hit.
Right? Reservoir. It really was a hit, though. It literally really was
shockingly
a hit.
Shockingly so.
And it was his first film. Like,
do you think it was tied to his name or just the fact that it was a good film?
I honestly think it's because of the fact that it was a good film. I know, though, I've read somewhere that it didn't do well in... okay, it didn't do badly, but it didn't do that well in America. But in London, it apparently blew up so much so that when Quentin went over to London, he literally couldn't walk in the street because he was, like, being mob attacked by, like, Londoners just because they loved it so much. And honestly, today, it's that the British still have a very high regard for this film. So I think it did what Quentin needed it to do for him. Yeah. So I personally would like to watch, if you know anything about Quentin Tarantino, he stated that he's only going to be making 10 films. But if you look at his film career, he actually has made more. But there's a specific list that he classifies as his 10 films. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is the 9th film on that list. And Reservoir Dogs is the first film on that list. So I personally want to go through all of the films. I've watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We've also done Django. That's my favorite line for that whole movie. And then we did Inglourious Men Born Out of Wedlock. And that's it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, we haven't done anything else.
So what's next?
Next is... isn't it Pulp Fiction?
I was actually going to ask about that.
I think it's Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, it actually looks quite an interesting film.
I've always... and I mean, Pulp Fiction is one of those films that like every video you watch about like... film trivia or, you know, like, where does this line come from? It's and you always have, like, the classics on those movie, like, whatever, trivia videos. And Pulp Fiction always comes up. Like, it always comes up.
And if you guys continue listening to this, you're going to find out two things out of this film that is related to Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I think we'll leave that one for last just to keep them sticking through. And no, you can't fast forward because we might just do it earlier.
You never know. So Reservoir Dogs was released in the year 1992.
You make it sound so far away.
But it was 30 years ago. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Literally, because it's 2022 now. This was 30 years ago, people.
I will admit, when I saw which year it was released, I was like,
yeah, you kind of, there's this thing in your head about old films, say.
One of his first films, 92. I was like, what was I doing in 92? Wow.
I wasn't alive in 92.
Yeah, I don't remember 92. Though.
I was -5. Literally. My parents weren't even married in 1992.
Well, there you go.
It was a long time ago. It's a 1-hour-and-39-minute film. This is the days where you had 90 minutes for a film that was like your standard.
And it does good old trailers. You know, with the voice.
I never watched the trailer.
Really?
Did you watch the trailer?
I watched it afterwards.
Oh, I'm serious.
And that voice of,
yes,
back in the day, when there was time when...
You gotta love good old trailers.
That's when you know it was an old trailer.
Old, yeah.
Now it's just like...
Did you hear the Will Arms scream?
No.
It was in the,
you're joking.
In one of the cop chases, the running down the street, Nick went, ah! It was like, nice, Quentin. Nice.
Really?
Yep. The Will Arms scream goes
oh,
in
damn.
It.
Oh, damn. Oh, there you go. I missed it.
So the budget for the film, there's actually an interesting story, but we'll get into that later. But the budget was $1.2 million. Box office was $2.9 million. So they literally more than doubled, which is very good for a first. Because you've got to remember at this stage, literally at this stage, Quentin Tarantino was not known. No one knew Quentin Tarantino.
Fresh guy off the block.
He literally was like this new director, which first of all puts it against you because like no one's ever seen your work. You're new in the industry. Like, what do you know type of thing. I remember I watched a video. So they made, it was back in the day, even with the old, like, you know when you know this is like an old video, but it was, they did like a documentary, a short documentary on what the stunt, you know, the stunt where Mr. Who was it? What was the cop? Mr. Orange.
Mr. Orange.
He was running and then he, I think it, no, it was Mr. Pink.
Okay.
Who stole the car? Mr. Pink. Yes.
Yes, that's right.
So he was running and then he, you know, he turns the corner and basically gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
And then he still throws the woman out the car and takes the car. So he didn't do, the actor didn't do that stunt. They got a stunt double. And they were literally doing like this whole documentary where the stuntman was explaining, this is what I'm doing. And then literally the chick that was announcing said, with new on the scene, Quentin Tarantino. But the whole video wasn't focused on Quentin Tarantino. It was focused on this very renowned stunt double that was like doing his thing.
Okay.
And then you saw like Quentin in the background and they like showed one snippet of him directing him and no, I trust him, you know, he says he knows what he's doing, as in Quentin speaking, he knows what he's doing. So Quentin Tarantino wasn't known, but the fact that it did as well as it did,
brilliant.
Yeah. So cast for the film, Quentin Tarantino acts in the film, so if you don't know what he looks like, just look for a very tall guy with brown hair
and a big chin
and forehead.
Oh, so you focus on the forehead. I noticed the chin. I'm just like, whenever I see him, I'm like.
And he smiles a lot.
He does.
He does smile a lot.
And he's very.
Yes.
His arms are up in the air whenever
but
he explains.
Yes. But even that's him as a director. Yeah. No, that's just definitely. Him as a person. I personally don't think Quentin Tarantino acts. I just think he shows up and he cameos as himself. Mm. Yeah, because I've seen him in a movie where he wasn't directing; he was just acting.
You're right.
But he was still like himself. Mm. So
because even in, I think it's like the first scene, you see him explain. I'm just like, that's the director.
That's the director right there, people.
There he is. He's Ta-da! Being himself.
Then Tim Roth plays Mr. Orange. I thoroughly enjoyed him. I personally don't. Okay, a lot of these actors I wasn't familiar with because it's a film from 1992.
Yeah.
Harvey Keitel, I know he actually. So what happened with him was originally Quentin Tarantino was only going to make this film basically like guerrilla shoot it. What that means is like you don't have filming permits. You don't have, it's like a very low budget film. Like you run around the city filming and if cops come, you run for it. You know, we've done that before. And then they had a budget of like 30,000 or something very minimal like that.
30,000, yeah.
And then a lot of producers came along and one producer even said, I'll give you $500,000 to produce it if my girlfriend can play Mr. Blonde's character. Another one also wanted to produce it, but they also wanted Quentin Tarantino to change something and Quentin didn't want to. But eventually Harvey got hold of the script. Now, by this time, he was quite a well-known actor and a high regarded actor, and he read the script and literally said to Quentin, let me have a role in this film and I will produce it as well. And he's the one that got the film's budget up to $1 million. So, and then Quentin was obviously able to make it. It's still it's still classified
but
as an indie film.
He was a producer,
actor,
but he said he also wanted
he
to
also
produce.
Produced
so
it,
doesn't that as a producer means you're also putting cash?
That's why he's the producer, because he put cash.
So I'm pretty sure that he was like, look, I'll also put in I'll put in a large amount, but then just understand I need, you're going to pay me a large amount as well, type of thing.
Is that what he said? Or don't the producers make money on how well the movie does?
Probably.
That's also why like a producer's not just going to sign on to any film, because they are banking on the film doing well.
So in other words, he made money out of it.
Yeah.
But they had to pay him as well. Right?
Look, I suppose because he had an acting role. For me, how I said, I could be wrong.
Maybe that's how it was.
For me, how I said, as a producer, you're an investor. So you're kind of like, you're not there on the scene. Mm. You know, you're not directing. You're not editing. You're not doing the hard labor. You're investing. You're just like a shareholder. This is how I... Obviously, some
decision
producers...
Decision making and cash. Yeah, cash. Yeah, cash.
And then when the film brings in money, that's kind of when you had a 50% share or you had a 20, and now you'll get 20% of however much the film brings in. So that's, I think, but then on the acting side though,
that's
unless
well.
Though he said, although I'm sure he would have gotten I'm sure he would have made money from the acting position. Yeah. So he was like the most well-known actor at the time in the film. Tim Roth had also done, he plays Mr. Orange. If you don't know who that is, he's the blonde guy who's the undercover cop.
Yeah.
But the way the story, the way Quentin told the story was brilliant. Like the way he revealed things later on. And in essence, what this film is about, it's very simple. It is literally a film about the first hour after, how many guys were there in total?
Like six, I think.
Six or seven guys. After they rob a jewelry or diamond store, what happens the first hour in a warehouse? So they obviously come. The plan was to come back to the warehouse after the robbery.
Yeah.
And it's the events literally that take place in the warehouse. It's very basic. Like literally, that's what it's about. That's what the story's about. There are times though where he jumps back.
Step time. Yeah.
Yeah. To just show you, okay, this is how this guy joined. This is the. So that you've got context. But the way he sets it up initially, it's not like you don't watch it in chronological order, which for me is clever because it keeps you like, at first you're like, what? Like at first you don't know what the movie's about. Then you're like, okay, what is the movie about? And you're like, okay, they robbed something. This guy's been shot. You know, they're panicking. So like the way they set that up. But originally Tom Roth didn't want to audition for the film. And then Quentin Tarantino and Harvey took him or met with him. I think it actually at Harvey's house or something like that. And they all got drunk. And only being drunk did Tim Roth then agree to a role in the film.
Under the influence. This is like, you know what, Quentin?
Let's do it.
Yeah, man.
Then I know Steve Buscemi. I think that was the one face other than Quentin Tarantino that I was like, oh, I know that guy. Like
Tim Roth for me, I just looked at him like, no, man. I know this guy's face.
Really?
Yeah. And I even watched interviews with him and that. I'm just like, I know this guy's face somewhere else.
But you don't know where from.
Yeah. I know that there are actually various movies that he's been in. He's in Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
Planet of the Apes.
The old one or the new one?
He's actually one of the apes.
Oh!
Yeah, but obviously, it's not that you'd recognize
him.
Yeah,
it's Tim Roth's face.
Yeah, and then Shang-Chi, he also plays one of the monsters as well. So obviously.
Oh, he does a lot of like motion capture. Yeah.
Once upon a time in Hollywood, he was in there.
What? Where?
Yeah, truly, yeah.
Who was he in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yeah, he was in there as well. And then he's been around. Even the way he talks.
That's sad. He's like okay, I suppose maybe it's also though he's not our era.
He did say though in the one interview, he mentioned that he had an option to sort of go more the mainstream way, like he was offered, but he likes the indie film industry.
Okay.
That sort of scene behind, you know, type of stuff, which is sort of stuck there. So
I actually respect him for that.
That's why he sort of stayed there. I know that with the film, what he loved about Mr. Orange and why he went after him is because he's obviously English, and he had to be American in the film. So in the film, he had to be a cop undercover as a.
Oh wow!
So for him, it was like a, you know.
He was doing the. He was literally undercover.
It was those four things that like really
You
should watch him in interviews. He's actually quite an interesting guy.
I saw him in, so James Corden recreated the torture scene with both him and Steve, His name's Steve, right? So they came on the show, yeah. And then he interviewed them, and then they did like a comedy skit where they recreated that scene.
Yeah.
And so I saw him a bit there. He's almost very like, he comes across as having a very dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
And he like keeps a straight face like most of the time.
Maybe I think in that one he did. He seemed very, but in a lot of his, he actually reminds me of someone who's very theatrical, like dramatic. Wow.
Sure.
Like with his face expressions.
Look, in Reservoir Dogs, he was so dramatic.
But he's very different though in his films.
Oh, really?
That's why I think he's actually, I actually see him as a very good actor.
Actor, yeah.
If you see him in other roles, in other movies, there are the very simple like face expressions that he actually pulls off. That I was actually quite, you know, researching through this film, and that he actually caught my attention.
Sure.
Yeah, I found him very, very interesting.
Yeah, no, he was. I honestly can say his character, he was very captivating.
Did you think it? Obviously, the part in the car where he got shot. Did you find that quite dramatic?
No, he was. That's what I'm saying. He was like,
I'm good.
I'm gonna die. And then he like twists his body. I'm like, don't twist your body like that, dude. You're bleeding.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, he was very. Yeah. And even his face, like, no, but. And then, you know, when they first get into the warehouse and he's looking at, I think it was Mr. White, and he's all traumatized.
Yeah.
And you actually like feel for him, because, like, sometimes in movies, people die so quickly that you don't get the, I don't want to die. I'm scared of dying. But obviously, yeah. Like,
I was like waiting for
really,
it.
Like,
I'm waiting for it. I'm like, yep, he's gone. And then he twitches. I'm like, no, still going.
Wow, he's still, this guy's got a stamina and a half. So this film's budget, even though it was $1 million, it was still low because obviously they had to pay actors, et cetera, et cetera. So many of the actors were asked to actually wear their own clothing. Most notably was Chris Penn's track, you know, the purple track jacket that he wore. That was actually his jacket. And then the signature black suits were actually provided for free by the costume designer. And the reason she did that was because she absolutely loves American crime film genre. So she actually said to Quentin, I'll donate these black suits to you for free. However, Steve wore his own black jeans instead of suit pants. And Michael Manson wore a jacket and pants that came from two different suits. So they wore their own clothes. Also, I know that the guy that played Mr. Blonde, who was Michael Madsen, he actually drove his own car.
Yeah,
that was his own Cadillac. And this I loved. So when he shows up at the warehouse, he's got a soda and he's drinking from a soda. He bought that soda for himself, for his character, so that his character could have. I'm like, yes, not these actors stroll on to set. Can I please have my whatever? Like, taking your character, like, for. I think that's also why I love this film is like all of them just came together and like. We're like, we're going to make something special here. We don't have a lot of money to do it. And they were willing to constantly, not compromise, but like figure out ways to get it done, even though, like, they weren't.
Well, Quentin Tarantino's original idea of this film was to just do it with friends.
Yes.
Type of thing. So
It was a passion project.
It went a bit further than it should have.
But yeah, it really did.
It was a good thing.
He also was originally going to play Mr. Pink, who's played by Steve. That's the one person that actually survives the whole film. He's like the last man standing, literally. And he made a point of letting the actors know when they were auditioning that he's playing Mr. Pink. Steve, though, really connected with the character. And so he said to Tarantino, I want to read for this this role. And Tarantino said, fine, you can, but you have to like kill this audition in order for me to give it to you and not give it to myself. And obviously he plays Mr. Pink, so he clearly killed his audition. And so Tarantino actually gave up that role and gave it to Steve. Yeah. Also, the budget once again was so low that police assistance for traffic control was not an option. So in the scene where Steve forces a woman out of her car, that whole scene, and drives off, they could only do it when the traffic lights were green.
I hope there was a stunts lady, yeah?
Yeah, she was.
Checked out the window. Wow. Just like, why?
So they had to like literally, okay guys, robot's turning red. Okay, let's go. Green. Yeah, so
that actually reminds me of something we shot a couple of years ago. We filmed a scene where two guys hijacked another person in a car just like up the road here, because we also, I mean, it was quiet, it was on a Saturday, yeah. Right? And
forgot that there's a police station, like,
and a bit after that, we had someone come up and he was like, like, he was genuinely in a panic. He's like, oh my word, because, and then when we told him, no, we're shooting, he's like, oh my word, oh my god, really? Oh, and then at that point, we realized, we're like, oh,
wait, was this the hijacking, or was this the shooting?
The hijacking
cops, yeah, came,
yeah.
Like, literally, cops came up and almost arrested the two dudes, shot them. Yeah, it was very intense. In fact,
we've actually still got it on film.
Yeah.
Where, like,
you see the cop car.
We got, like, the long shot. And then we're, like, driving up. And next moment, we see the police van behind.
and they came stop out at of distance. Nowhere.
And next moment, they even, like, pop out the side. And they're running up with the
gun. The gun's like, oh, yeah.
And then we're just like, go down. Get down. Just tell them.
We're
just
filming.
Get down. Yeah.
Yeah, shame. So guys, be careful where you film, you know, if you're guerrilla filming. But in an interview in 2009 with the BBC, and I mean, that's a lot of years later, Quentin actually said that he was proud the movie, that this movie is often on top 10 heist movies lists, even though you never actually see the heist, which is so true. That's the crazy part. This film is so simple. Like, literally, when I was watching, when they said that it's about the hour after a heist in a warehouse, that's actually what the movie's about. Like, there's nothing more to it, actually. Like, you don't go into backstory. You sort of go into, like,
kind of touch.
But very slight. It's not like, my mama used to say when I was a young boy. No, you don't even know if they're in relationships.
I think that was good because of the fact that they had to conceal their identities from the others. So they just sort of kept that.
Yeah, kept that going. I
mean, was there anybody's name that we knew?
Yes.
Only the one.
The Mr. White revealed his name to Mr. Orange, which was the undercover cop. Yeah. And then Steve, who was Mr. Pink, still said, why did you tell him his name? He was like, he was dying.
Yeah,
there's that. But I can't remember his name.
No, I don't remember his name either.
Yeah.
He's just like me.
And then also, once again, low budget film. Mr. Orange, his apartment, so that's the undercover cop, was the upstairs to the warehouse where most of the movie takes place. The filmmakers redecorated it to look like an apartment in order to save money on finding a real apartment.
We know what that's like. We've turned normal rooms into hospitals.
Right. We have. So this is now, we said that we'd fill you in on some Pulp Fiction trivia while we edit. So in the film, the dude that cuts off the cop's ear, can I just say that was so intense. That scene was, it was so well done, but it was so intense. Like, I think it honestly could be one of, don't say this,
it was kind of creepy with the music.
No, it was very good. Yeah. For me though, it's one of the film, the film industry's best torture scene. Because it's so like, that's horrible. Like, oh my goodness. And also that song that was played in that scene took up, in fact, I don't think they had any more money after they bought the rights for that song for any of the other music in the film.
Yeah.
So all of, Quentin was literally like, I won't have any other music in the film except I want that song for that scene. So he was very particular about getting that song. Obviously, there is other music in the film, but that's because the producers and that were able to, you know, work their magic. And
isn't Quentin known to like write pieces for music?
Yes, he even includes it in, because Quentin writes his own scripts. He's a writer. Director, so he writes his own script and then he makes the movie, and he does include the but back to Pulp Fiction. So Mr. Blonde, who does the torture scene, right, his real name is Vic Vega, so that's actually his character's name. And now this is the same surname as Vince Vega, who's played by John Travolta in Pulp Fiction 1994, so that was the next one. And Tarantino revealed that Vic and Vince are actually brothers. So this Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, he said, are two films that they both consist in the same universe. So literally, those two characters, even though they're not in the films together, they're brothers. And he actually intended to do a prequel to both films called Double V Vega, which would star the Vega brothers, which would have been Michael Manson and John Travolta. But what happened was Tarantino said eventually the two actors he felt had gotten too old to reprise their younger selves, and so he basically abandoned that project.
Well, today, you know, they're doing a lot of CG, Quint. you know, maybe you want to give that a
try. It's not the same, though.
They did it with Samuel Jackson.
Yeah, they
remember,
did, I suppose.
Baby smooth skin and all, you know?
Well, no, you Will Smith.
And Will Smith, yeah.
When did they do it with Sam in Captain Marvel?
In Captain Marvel,
yes.
Yeah.
And then this is interesting. Mm. So Reservoir Dogs actually made, you know, individual character posters. Like, that's such a normal thing today. Yeah. So you have Avengers, and then you have an Iron Man poster, then you have a Hulk poster, then you have a... So where they do, like, the different characters.
I want the Thor one.
You see?
Yeah.
But he was the first person to do that. Mm. Because before that, movie posters, it was one poster with all of your characters on or whatever. Mm. But he actually wanted individual character posters made. And what he did was he'd had a picture of the character. He'd take the iconic line. Mm. And then the reason he did it, which is brilliant, is in the film, all of the guys involved are trying to be the main character. They actually, all the characters are fighting for, like, the main role, if you think about it.
True.
And so that's why he wanted to give each one an individual poster to almost show that they were all fighting to do that. But I mean, that this film is what made individual character posters a thing that it is today, guys. Yeah, this is Quentin Tarantino, you know, literally changed the face of the film industry.
Quentin Tarantino has started a lot of what do you call it? You know, something that then a lot of other people do afterwards. I was watching a film about him. Well, more like an interview. And there was a piece of music that he found that he used in Kill Bill. But this music he found in a Chinese film. And it was such a short piece. And he used it in Kill Bill. And from now onwards, like, they've been using it
for that, like a hero.
Like, they used it in a film called Team America. Mm. They used it in a part, Panda. They used it, like even Shrek. And
it becomes like a full moment.
And it's exactly the same piece. Sure. For the same, whatever's happening in the scene, it's where, like, this team gets together and they're about to, like, fight and stuff like that. So, Quentin.
Also, mentioning Chinese film, I don't know if you know this, but this film, Reservoir Dogs, was actually based... Quentin got the idea for it on another Chinese film. And that film was all about this undercover cop. It's literally the same thing. An undercover cop joining these bank or these robbers that are going to rob a jewelry store. That's literally the theme of that movie. And people even were like, he basically copied that film. But Quentin has actually stated that he's almost like devoted Reservoir Dogs to that film, because that's where he got the idea for. But now, so this is Quentin Tarantino's first film, right? They take it to the Sundance Film Festival, which is huge, right? Like, think about it. Your first film, take it to the Sundance Film Festival.
Is this like a... would it be a premiere?
Yes, it is a premiere.
So it's a premiere,
it's the first
right?
ever screening.
Okay, cool.
No one's ever watched the movie before. It's the first audience screening. Mm. And Quentin Tarantino said it was horrible because basically this film was shot for widescreen, and the projector that they had, they only had the normal size lenses, which means the image was cropped, like seriously cropped. Mm. And so half of what was shot wasn't shown on screen, which is horrible. Plus then halfway through the film, when they're fighting, the lights apparently came on in the theater. Someone turned the lights on, and then they were like, oh, flip, it's not finished. So they turned the lights off again. And then there was apparently a power outage. Quentin was just like, this was horrible. Like, shame, the first screening ever.
And it was just before the final shot.
Yes.
So it was like, that's it. And everyone's just like, so what happened?
Yeah. No shame.
That's like the punch of the film.
Yeah, it really is the punch of the film. Mm. This film was also voted the best independent film ever by Empire Magazine. I must be honest, I have to actually agree with that, because it didn't even feel like it. It looks like an independent film. I was amazed at how simple it was. But at the same time, it didn't feel like an independent film.
There were some places, I don't know if you saw, where they sort of left imperfections in. There was one part where, I don't know who it was, he's lighting a lighter. And
he can't get it.
He has his methods, and eventually he's like, okay, so I think it was part of his character. He was like, okay, cool, my character's going to light this thing like this. And I don't know if you saw that character, even though he was smoking, he wasn't smoking.
Yes! Did you see that? I was still like, did he give the guy a poison cigarette?
It was twice.
Yes.
So he lights it for Mr. Pink.
When he lights it
for himself, the flame's so far away.
Yes, that he doesn't light it.
And then I noticed the second cigarette that he had, he would do this, and then he wouldn't exhale. Ever. And he did it a couple times, and I noticed
he obviously didn't smoke.
It almost attracted my eye to the people who were smoking, and I noticed, I was just like, that guy doesn't smoke.
I thought that they were going to bring that in somehow, but obviously it wasn't part of the story. It was just him not. He's the producer. That's the actor that joined. But I did see that now that you mentioned
that is cool. It's like,
and then also they say that it was also voted the most influential movie in the past 15 years by the same magazine, which I also, I also agree with.
Well, I saw on YouTube trailers or interviews or stuff centered around the film that was released like 7 years ago.
Yes.
So it shows you how stuff still...
Yeah. I must be honest, I thought when we were doing research, I was going to find nothing on this film because it's so old. You know, YouTube wasn't a thing back then. Mm. I was shocked at the amount. Mm. There was a 3-hour documentary. I saw a 3-hour. I didn't watch it. But I saw a 3-hour documentary on... So it's clearly a brilliant film. The only female line that was in the whole film was cut. That whole scene was cut. And actually, I didn't even think about it, but there's no woman that speaks in the whole film. So there were two things I didn't like about the film. The first was the profanity. It was horrible. Literally, they even say there were 421 uses of profanity. Yeah. And apparently, it's on the list of the
27th highest usage
of the F word in a film ever. So,
169 F words.
For me, it spoiled it. It really did. And then also the conversation between the guys.
Right in the beginning.
But also there was another scene again. I was just like, this is. And I must be honest, I don't know if... Just hear what I'm saying, right? I don't know if this film would have done as well as it did back then nowadays because of the whole feminist movement. Because it really, first of all, there's like, okay, there was one female line, but then it was cut. But I do understand. I mean, Quentin said the film's about the hour after the robbery. It's not like they're going to call their girlfriends to come meet them at the warehouse. So it does make sense from that perspective. But then also like the way they spoke about females was very derogatory at times type of thing. So... Yeah, but for me, it wasn't like I'm not feminist. I'm not gonna complain about there was no chick in the movie. Like honestly, that doesn't bother me. But just the conversation was like, I think those were the. Otherwise, I thoroughly enjoyed
it. And it was like the first scene. Like it kicks off straight into that conversation.
And that conversation apparently, so obviously Quinton referred to Madonna's song Like a Virgin.
Yeah.
And she then actually watched the film. She did like it, but she actually said to Quinton, that wasn't the meaning behind my song, Like a Virgin.
Yeah.
And then also one of the actors.
Yes, who was it?
Why do I remember the surname Penn? Sean Penn. It wasn't Sean Penn. But he is he's brothers to... The guy that was once married? No, she did marry Sean Penn.
Brother?
Sean Penn's brother acted in the film.
It's the his brother.
Chris Penn. Chris Penn acted in the film, but in that conversation, he doesn't say anything because he actually at that point, Sean Penn and I think Madonna had already divorced, so he didn't want to say anything about his ex-sister-in-law, so he actually keeps quiet that entire scene. But then also, George Clooney auditioned for the role of Mr. Blonde. George Clooney wasn't a big actor. This was before his time. So he actually didn't get the role. But then he did end up, obviously his career blew up, and he has acted with Quentin Tarantino before. And then also another person who auditioned for this movie was Samuel L. Jackson.
And he didn't
get the role. But Quentin Tarantino, I thought this is very cool. He actually has a habit of casting actors who auditioned for one of his movies but didn't get the role. And so he'll often cast you in his next film. Okay. So Samuel L. Jackson was cast in Pulp Fiction obviously has been cast in his films.
I'm sure he gave him a, you know, I promise I'll use you kind of card type
and then
of thing.
Shame, he actually does. Yeah, like he actually does, which I think is really cool. Mm. Also, the editor of this film, she isn't alive today. She actually passed away from heat stroke.
I know.
I didn't know you could die from heat stroke. I was like, what?
While on a jog. How about that?
That's insane. Sure. But she actually, her manager told her not to, because she was fairly new. He was like, they said, I don't know if it was a woman or a man, but they told her not to. And she actually decided to go with her gut and did edit it. And then her and Quentin Tarantino actually went ahead, and then his first six movies were edited by her. I don't know if I said her name. Her name is Sally Menka. Mm. So she actually went on to basically edit his films until she died, which I think is pretty cool.
If you've got a good gut feeling, go
with it. Mm. But they do say that in the film industry. Mm. I know even the Duffer brothers are like, go with your gut. Mm. Don't go with, yeah. And then Reservoir Dogs. Maybe you're like, what is it? A movie about dogs? No, there's literally no dogs in the film. But I actually didn't know what Reservoir Dogs means. Apparently it's slang for someone who snitches to the police or someone who's an undercover cop, which makes complete sense now. It's like, oh.
It sounds like it's a disrespect.
Yeah.
Right?
Like a
You know, you might as well have called them, you dirty rat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he actually, Quinton got the idea or the title for this film. He was working in a video store, which I think is so cool. He was working in a video store, and one day he happened to recommend a film. It was a French film. To a person, and the customer mockingly replied, I don't want to see no Reservoir Dogs. And that stuck in his head. And obviously then he was like, I'm making a movie called Reservoir Dogs. But however, even though there's no dogs in the actual film and the title is never actually spoken in the film, like no one says Reservoir Dogs, but there are two references to dogs. The first one is the German Shepherd present in Mr. Orange's flashback.
Cool. Yeah.
And then Mr. Blonde called Mr. White Doggy. So those are the two dog references. Yeah, I must be honest, I did enjoy it. For me though, the swearing, especially in the beginning, like I think as the movie got, like the action happened, it like got better, like then you're like, okay, cool. The beginning I was just like, Quentin, what are you doing, man?
There were a lot of unnecessary times when what are they doing circling the block? I'm dying. Yeah, then the other guy's like, what? I'm bleeding. I'm just like, okay, sure.
You could have said that.
That's hectic.
2 seconds.
Yeah, well.
Because you didn't use all that profanity.
Or, you know, die. Take it easy,
dude. You're dying, dude. Do you want to get to heaven or not?
The blood pressure's pushing more blood out your wound there, bro. That's what I just thought of.
For me, though, the only thing that confused me was, so Quentin Tarantino is known for taking bad stories that have horrible endings and giving them that perfect Hollywood ending. Like we've saw that in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in Django, all of that. For me, this one didn't have that, but maybe it was just like his first film.
Maybe
you know?
He did it and he was like, good film, but we just need to just tweak one or two things. And maybe that's where he sort of just...
By the end of the movie, you're like, what was the point?
Yeah.
But it was still a good film. Like that was still, the story was told in a good way. The acting was good. It was so simple. For me, what amazed me was it was, and obviously it's because it was an independent film. And they cut scenes because of budget restraints and things like that. But like, I think Mr. Blue died. Hey. You were actually supposed to see his death, but because of time constraints and budget constraints, they filmed it in 35 days. They ended up cutting that scene. So, yeah.
And that's the way it was.
Mm-hmm. But I am glad I watched it. You see where Quentin came from. Yeah. Although he started off well, I must be honest. Sometimes, like Peter Jackson's first movie, Shame. That movie was very weird. I was like, okay, wow. That movie gave me hope.
I remember that.
I was like, okay, I'm not too bad, you know?
Yeah, I remember that film. I don't know why I came across it, maybe about a month ago.
Oh, is there?
But I came across it.
You can watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's actually on there.
Mm.
What did they call themselves? Wingnut Productions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, this one was better than that one.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, so Reservoir Dogs, Quentin Tarantino.
I look forward to the next film.
Yeah.
Although I suspect that there might be quite a bit of bad language in it.
Yeah. I feel like that is a thing that's part of Quentin Tarantino's movies. Although I do feel like, I don't know why, but in my mind it got a bit better. Unless...
How do you mean?
Like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I remember the scene with Leonardo DiCaprio in his trailer where he's like mad with himself and he's and there he used the F word like a couple of times,
yeah.
But like in the I don't remember it. Like Reservoir Dogs, they filmed constantly. They swore constantly. If you understand what
that's
I'm saying.
That's not saying it. It was very unnecessary.
Yeah. Whereas like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you could watch like quite a couple of scenes.
I almost get the impression that Quentin's like, nah, stick the F word in there, man. If you can say it, and if you can say it twice if you want to. You know what I'm saying?
Three times for good luck.
Yeah, it's almost. Quentin,
he probably speaks like that.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well. Quentin definitely strikes me as a guy, and I could be completely off, but that's someone that really is not afraid to express himself or express the way that he wants. I know that there was a huge... If you look on the wiki page of Quentin Tarantino, there's actually a section there of a lot of controversies of stuff that's happened where people have tried to push up against him, and he's just straight up and just been like, nope. I don't think so. Go read them. There's actually quite a lot of interesting little situations.
I know in this film they wanted to remove the torture scene and he was like, no.
Yeah, I mean, what? Yeah, look, there's worse torture scenes, eh?
I just think the way it was done.
It was kind
brilliant.
Of freaky because of the music.
Yeah, I think Mr. Blot, the character was like, he was he was a psychopath. But, oh my goodness.
But I didn't personally really find it too.
Yeah, no, it was.
Too, I mean. He, like, pulled out the blade, and I'm just like, oh,
yeah, like, they didn't show you the actual cut off the ear.
And the character that played Mr. Blue, right? He had actually just had a kid around that time.
No,
filming.
That was the cop. That was the cop.
Was
the cop, yeah. Oh. They took a cop hostage.
Oh, I thought it was Mr. Blue. No. So filming that scene was, like, quite a struggle, especially because I relate, because I also heard... Because I was also thinking, wait, this guy's just about to die. Like, what are you doing in the last moments? How do you beg and plead? What do you do? And this guy's psycho. He's going psycho. And he's like, dude, I'm not just going to kill you. I want to make you suffer. And then when I heard
him. And I'm going to play music while I'm doing
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And then when I heard him say, come on, I just got a kid. I'm like, oh, no. Come on, dude. The guy's just got a kid. Come on.
The actor that was torturing, so the guy that played Mr. Blonde, I think his name's Michael, whatever. He had just had a child.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yes. So for him, but he acted very well because
he hid.
Yeah.
His
he said he actually battled to film that scene.
That's right,
But that didn't, honestly, that didn't come across. Mm. Like, honestly, he came across as a psycho. Mm. Like, I was like, what the what's wrong with this guy?
Well, at least he didn't kill him.
When he died, I was like, yeah, good. That's what you get.
He just cut his ear off and then he was going to burn him.
Yeah, right. He just cut his ear off and then he was just going to burn him.
You know,
Ryan, you do realize his face was bleeding. There was open wounds and he was throwing petrol at him.
You know, there's worse things out there of
Ryan,
torture.
Open wound. Okay. Petrol. Open wound. What? Oh, petrol. Yeah. Open wound and petrol.
I was thinking about that when he poured in his ear and I was just like, that's going to be burning right there. I'm sure your ear feels like, oh no, you don't have an ear. Never mind. I was going to say, and he still takes the ear. Hello, can you hear me?
That was a brilliant scene. I'm glad they didn't cut it out. Yeah. Honestly, it was one of the most memorable scenes of the movie. So Quentin Tarantino was good to say no, you know. He's like, no, we are keeping that in.
And then there was a real criminal in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Hey? Edward Bunker, go read about him. Quite a...
He actually went to jail.
Quite a rebel.
And got out on parole.
11 years old, he was taken into... not jail. What do they call it? Just like a...
Oh, the when you're under 18.
Yeah, when you're under 18. And then I think by the age of 14 or 17, that's right, then he was really put in real form. And this guy, and he wrote books.
I know.
He was writing
books. I was like, how do you become
books.
Famous after going to jail?
He's writing novels and all that type of stuff. I was just like...
In fact, didn't he get out on parole and then literally drive straight to the set? I read that somewhere that one
really?
Day he got out. I don't know if it was parole or bail.
Wow.
But literally straight from the prison or police station or whatever, he went straight to set. I was like... Okay. Yeah.
And there he is sitting in the film.
And apparently, you know the big boss in the film, the guy that was in charge of the whole operation?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Apparently, he wasn't nice to work with.
Mm.
He was horrible. He'd forget his lines. He would take long on scenes. Quentin eventually got like into...
Quentin almost fired him.
Yeah. And the cast was still happy
they
about
were, like,
it.
Applauding.
Yeah, because he was just unprofessional.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was Quentin Tarantino's first film. Reservoir Dogs.
We'll be doing Pulp Fiction next.
Yeah. Pulp Fiction, yeah. It has John Travolta, Samuel L. Jackson, and what's her name? She's married to Ethan Hawke. Her daughter's Maya Hawke, who's in Stranger Things.
No clue.
Which just makes sense why Maya Hawke was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, is it?
Daughter of chick from Pulp Fiction.
Mm.
But the blonde. chick. Can't remember her name.
Yes.
Next week. Come yes. next week for her name if you don't know it.
Yeah. We're going to give you the lowdown lowdown on all of that information right there. And Pulp Fiction, I know that there's a lot of trivia. I think there's going to be a lot of trivia in there because I know that I've heard so many Pulp Fiction, like a lot of facts about whatever stuff related to that film. So that'll be next week.
Let's go. Mm. But until then, peace.
Cheers.
Stay updated and entertained with Active FM on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, LinkedIn, Spotify, Anchor, and everywhere else. Engage with us. Like the posts, comment, share them out, retweet, and repost. Spread the word. Active FM. Radio has never been better.